Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise, and I am so excited. I hope you can even hear it in my voice. I have Dr. Beth Frates here in the studio, and she is someone that I met, gosh, a couple years back on Twitter. And she is a physiatrist and health and wellness coach. She's an award-winning teacher at Harvard. She's a lifestyle medicine pioneer. I'm going to have the link to her bio in the show so you can read about all the amazing things that she's done. But I think you're just going to get to know more about who she is, how she thinks, and why I feel so fortunate to have her here today. Thank you, Beth, for being here.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Denise. It's a real pleasure to be on a podcast with you.
Oh, my goodness. So one of the reasons why I'm incredibly excited is when I sort of took this leap into the world beyond my private practice and any teaching at UCLA, I met some really amazing people like yourself on social media. And I think one of the things that you and I both, the way we view health, well-being, is we have a wellness mindset instead of an illness mindset.
Exactly. I agree.
So, Dr. Beth, can you tell us your journey? Like, what inspired you? Just give us some background. I know because, you know, besides being a colleague, you're a friend. And I think it's kind of interesting. I think both of our fathers motivated us in different ways to pursue medicine. So can you tell your journey with that, with how you got here?
Yes, definitely. Thank you for the opportunity to do so, because I so appreciate my father for many things in my life. And to be honest, my passion for medicine and specifically lifestyle medicine does really come from a seed that was planted many years ago when I was 18 and he was 52. Unfortunately, it's a difficult seed, and this is one of those things when you wonder if you've been buried, but actually you realize you've been planted and you blossom. And fortunately, that was the case for both my father and for me with this incident at age 52 for him and 18 for me, where he was the pillar of strength, New York City businessman running his company. He was father of two children. He was really living the life, really what would look like the American dream on the outside. But on the inside, there was a lot of suffering, internal stress and worry. And in fact, deep inside in his physiology, there was pathology. There was cholesterol building up in his coronary arteries, and some malfunctioning of his heart. And this led to his heart attack and stroke, which left him paralyzed on his left side. And this was an event that was clearly life-changing for him in terms of his...
It's also unimaginable, right? Yeah. You're like, he's like, why me? What's going on? How did this happen?
Exactly. And I will share, he's a businessman from a business family. So there was no one medical in the family at all. And I don't believe he even had a doctor, actually. And I'm not sure when he last saw the doctor at age 52. I'm not sure. Maybe it was when he was 20 for his physical, or when he went into the Air Force. I don't know, but he did not follow protocol with annual visits. So yeah, this was unimaginable. I think he felt invincible and powerful. And as I mentioned, deep down, perhaps an insecurity and a lot of stress. The insecurity is likely around taking over his own father's business and making sure that it was successful for the second generation. That comes with a lot of angst for many. So the good news behind this story is that he did make a complete recovery, except for fine motor movement in his left hand, meaning he couldn't manipulate small objects such as a dime or a penny. Otherwise, you would not know that he had suffered a heart attack and a stroke after a year of hard work and recovery, you would not have noticed that. But most importantly, Dr. Denise, he took that time. He took a pause and he took some time to think about how he wanted to live life moving forward. And yes, there was fear of a second stroke, which led him to programs like Pritikin and Whitaker, intensive inpatient programs where he learned about the power of nutrition, exercise, and stress reduction. There was a shift, a complete shift in the way he led his life, in his lifestyle. So he started to incorporate routine exercise. He's plate instead of literally, Denise, having steak and maybe some mashed potatoes, really swamped with butter and some potentially some peas.
So he was a meat and potatoes guy that had to look at the whole lifestyle. And essentially, you know, what came to me, I wanted to ask you, I've never asked you this, besides his incredible exercise, nutrition, pause, and realizing, you know, you and I talk about epigenetics, how much our environment influences our DNA expression and our physiology. But then there's also times when people can connect and go deeper within and kind of connect with their higher self. Did your dad have, besides his incredible life changes, did he talk with you about any meditation or prayer or something where he felt connected to something while he was on this journey?
That's a great question. And it's interesting, Dr. Denise, because no one has ever probed in this area since I have been working in medicine and lifestyle medicine and sharing his journey with others. No one has asked that question. He was a Christian and did practice and did go to church routinely. And so he did have a spiritual life, a religious life that he it was a part of him before and certainly was a part of him after. Was there a greater intensity in that? Was there a change or shift in that? I am unaware of that. He seemed the same to me in that realm and capacity. I think he likely made greater contributions after this event, meaning at his funeral, which was about 7 years ago now. He lived 27 years after his initial heart attack and stroke, and he died at the age of 79. And at his funeral, I did learn things I didn't know, such as he had donated new Bibles to the church because theirs were getting to be worn out, and they were very, very old. I actually didn't know this. He never told me or shared this with the family, but the church did share with me that he had made that donation, and it was after his heart attack and stroke. I don't know, again, how that necessarily impacted him with that decision, but I do know that he made some efforts to make significant contributions with his time and to try to make the church rise in the best way that he knew how. Again, though, I never knew that, so I was really pretty delighted to hear such stories about him after. He's a very modest and humble human, so I wasn't really surprised that he had done these things. I also know, for example, when my cousin, whom he was close to, graduated from college, he was at Dartmouth at the time, he left the ceremony with my parents and his parents, and he walked by an artist who had several beautiful paintings of Dartmouth. And my cousin stood there and stared at one longingly, and he wanted one, but at the time he couldn't afford it. So they passed on. But my dad circled back and he bought that painting for my cousin, and it hangs in his office now. And the truth is, I also didn't know that story. I did not know about that until my cousin stood up at the funeral when the minister said, "Does anyone want to share a story about Don?" And actually several people shared stories I had never heard. And that was one of them. Again, this was after his own heart attack and stroke. So I don't know if he would have done those things before, but he certainly was very mindful that he could have an impact, and he wanted people to live their best lives, and he wanted to contribute in significant ways to people's lives, but yet sort of behind the scenes at the same time, in a humble, modest kind of a way. Again, his children didn't even know the things that he was doing.
Right. So what I'm sensing is his change. I think this is really with humility for all of us. And I have a short story I'm going to share. But when we're faced with life-threatening situations or trauma, or when we're watching the news and we see that there's shootings or there's just something, you know, it's a time to do what I would say a life review.
Right.
And I think we get connected. And when I was in India speaking, I had to figure out, how am I going to talk and blend East meets West and look at healthy mindset? And when you were speaking, I was listening very careful to all your words. And I was thinking, I always talk about awareness, self-love, and altruism. Mm. And so your dad's level of awareness with his nutrition, with his stress reduction, with his connectedness to family, the deeper meaning. It's like you enjoy when you go through a suffering or something, it's an opportunity if you go into the suffering to be more aware of your physical and your mental health. You can have more self-love, make great choices. And then it sounds like your dad, I heard the altruism. He did acts of kindness and compassion, man of action, did not need the credit. And right. So he's like an embodiment and inspiration for all of us and for you. And it really, really, he's so influential in you being the woman you are as a doctor, as a mother, and as a healer today.
Yes. I think you're right. I haven't spent a lot of time pondering this, so I appreciate this opportunity, and I believe you're correct. You're spot on.
Well, and then I'm just going to do something where I feel like such a kindred spirit to you, and we're going to talk about, you know, lifestyle medicine and the journey, and I'll have you on other shows, but I think the essence of someone getting to know who is Dr. Beth Frates, who's her family? Because when we interact with other people, whether it be a friend, our neighbor, our patient, your teacher at Harvard, the students, surgeons going throughout the world, you know, we bring all of our life experiences and with humility and gratitude. And I can tell you, my father, who, interestingly enough, he passed away in 2011, he was supposed to die. He was supposed to die when I was in third grade. He was very fortunate to have recovery from alcoholism, but his alcoholism got to the point where I remember the look on my mom's face. My brother was at a Cub Scouts event and she just looked so like shocked. She had gotten a call that my dad went into delirium tremens on the side of a road in front of my brother and another Boy Scout. And had to go and be in the intensive care unit. And he really almost died.
Wow.
And so the beautiful part of the story is that, you know, it took him one or two times, but he did reach sobriety. He fought for his family. He was just like, interestingly enough, he was a very successful businessman in Chicago. He was doing well, even with the drinking alcohol. It was like a maintenance drinker. Right? Mm-hmm. So it looked good on the outside, but on the inside, he was dealing with stress with using alcohol and abusing alcohol. And so I was fortunate to see him get sober. You know, I was a wise soul at the time, I think. I don't know. Did you watch those shows, The Love Island and Fantasy Island, or did you ever watch those shows?
I think Love Boat and Love Boat. Island. Yes, I yes. did.
So I was watching. So at the time I was watching some of those shows and I said to my mom, if he doesn't get sober, you've got to divorce him. I was this like little miss already, like he needs to get it together for the family. And by the way, I told him that. So there's a lot of healing. I don't feel like there's any disrespect. In fact, I believe that he's probably, if you believe energetically, he can be here in spirit. I feel like he's smiling. So it's like my dad and I have this incredible relationship. And I think what happened is, I think a lot of times, whether someone's abusing alcohol, I have people in my practice that are now sober from heroin, that essentially there's a lot of shame around that decision, right? Yeah. And so I think not only did I see my father get sober, my mom and dad stay married, he went on to live over 30 something years past the time he was supposed to, because he started making healthy choices. And so the other thing is I think your father and my father really influenced the way we interact with our patients, and the way we perhaps take some of the shame away when someone maybe was making a lifestyle choice and they're really hard on themselves. Mm-hmm. And so maybe, you know, we're going to talk about the lifestyle medicine book, but maybe we can talk about how you inspire people in a session with you, because as a physiatrist and a coach, you know, maybe give us a scenario, especially at that amazing stroke group that you lead, like how you motivate people and inspire them to make change. Because I think your father and my father inspired us to be on this path as doctors. And I think it's really interesting to then see how much maybe indirectly that helps us so much with interacting with our patients.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Great. Thank you for sharing that information with me and the listeners about your own father, and for this opportunity to talk about how I used my background and my personal experience, as well as my training, to help empower others to make healthy lifestyle choices like your dad did and like my dad did after a significant event. I just want to take this moment to acknowledge the fact that you mentioned your father looked fine on the outside. He was actually managing his career and was quite successful in Chicago, as you said. And if you were listening and your audience was listening carefully in the beginning, I also mentioned that my dad was quote unquote living the American dream, but silently suffering inside. Your dad went to alcohol, which is something many people do. And others, as you mentioned, can go to other drugs like heroin and opiates. We do have our opiate epidemic, so it's important. And substance use is actually one of the pillars of lifestyle medicine. We hope to eliminate any substance use that's impairing the function for patients. So for some people who are drinking alcohol, it's elimination or moderation. With smoking, of course, it's simply cessation. But going back to this idea of suffering, my dad's go-to was constant work. So workaholism, not alcoholism, workaholism, such that he would work from 7 in the morning till 11 at night, come home 11:30 and still be working, making lists. And not only that, another coping mechanism he used, apart from his workaholism, was sugary snacks, cakes, cookies, candies. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned briefly his meat and potato diet. And more importantly, there was nothing colorful on his plate. And mostly he was consuming processed foods. From New York City, there's ample opportunity to have Burger King, McDonald's, any number of fast food chains in the 80s. Everywhere you looked, you could find one. So this idea of you can't judge a book by its cover, basically.
Absolutely. That people can be putting on that smile, putting on, you know, this is my family going on this great vacation. But I think people don't often have the ways to check in with one another, even in your home. So if you have a loved one and you're noticing maybe that they are working a bit much, or they're pouring more glasses of wine, or they're shopping more than they should, it's really important that we check in with our loved ones and know what's going on from an emotional well-being and an awareness level, and have those deeper discussions. Because that's when lifestyle changes can happen, when you're aware, you're talking about it, and you're educated.
Exactly, Dr. Denise, exactly. And that leads right into my next point, which was the question you asked: how do you motivate and inspire people to make these changes that our dads both made? And it goes to that point you just made. I use what I call the coach approach. So I don't judge a book by its cover. I've seen so many clients now. I know that what we see is not necessarily the whole picture. So I come at it with a curiosity. That's the C for coach. So we have curiosity, open-minded. That's non-judgmental, C-O. A is appreciation. Appreciation for the journey that person's been on. Appreciation for the positivity they may have experienced in the past and could be experiencing now. The positive steps forward that they have made. That's the A. And then the C is compassion. Really trying to walk in their shoes and thinking about what step can I take to help empower them to move towards a healthy habit and sustain that healthy habit. And then the last one is honesty. Coming to each visit, each lifestyle medicine group meeting with the stroke survivors, each one with honesty. So I put this cap on. I call it the coach approach cap. And I make sure my being, that's the being part of my work. My being is in alignment with this coach approach where I'm constantly curious, open and not judgmental, appreciative, compassionate, and honest. So those are the being skills that I bring to these meetings.
Dr. Beth, you know, I want to, this is just with humility, I think would be really fun, and maybe we could write a very short blog post that goes with this, because your coach approach really, if, you know, when I talk about awareness, self-love, and altruism, I think part of awareness is the exact coach approach. It's like a recipe for being in the now. How do we check in with ourselves? How do we hit reset? You know, there's moving meditations. There's just accountability. I actually wear bracelets that have meaning. I have bracelets that I designed that remind me in between seeing patients to just be connected with the highest level of healing. How do we stay in the space of loving and kindness? So please keep going, but it'd be really fun for us to integrate a short kind of description of the coach approach and why that brings a greater level of awareness so we can have optimal health.
Thank you. That's a wonderful opportunity. And I'm grateful for your mentioning, potentially collaborating on this post. And let's do that. So moving forward in terms of what do I do to motivate people, as you were asking, there's that being piece that we'll be exploring together also in that post. There's the being piece. Then there's this doing piece. And I firmly believe that when I work with people, they do the work, actually. They're doing it.
Absolutely.
I know you believe the same thing.
But they're accountable. There's a level of self-love and accountability.
Yes. And I can ignite a spark and I can help people gain perspective. I can help people reframe. I can help people envision. And I can bring people to that point of self-awareness. And I can also invite people to take the coach approach with themselves. So allowing them to be curious about themselves, non-judgmental about their past, appreciative about the things that have gone well, compassionate, self-compassion. Kristen Neff's work, right? Self-compassion and also honest with themselves. So the doing... That's the being. And then the doing is listening. So Dr. Denise, how do I empower people? Well, I go to my sessions and I say to myself, I am curious, I am open, I'm appreciative, I'm compassionate, I am honest. And most of the time, I am listening to the person in front of me or the group that I am facilitating. There's a lot of listening. And then there's what we call open-ended questions that invite people to dig deeper into the recesses of their brains to think about things in a new way. So instead, for example, when I'm working with someone who's smoking, we still have a large number of smokers in the US and in our nation and actually internationally. There's still a lot of smokers, even though we know about the data with its correlation to cancer and how addictive it is. We're still fighting that battle, although we're definitely making great strides there. But for example, instead of introducing myself to a client, them telling me that they smoke, and then my launching into a lecture about cancer and heart disease and COPD and all the things that I actually used to do. I mean, many years ago, before I was in this space, I would launch into those things, hoping that fear would be the thing to motivate and empower people. And quite frankly, I probably did scare a few people into quitting. I don't know that it was sustainable.
Dr. Beth, I just love to have so you're using the coach approach instead of the scare approach.
Right.
And I just thought love conquers fear. So I'm also thinking that we always credit the science, the data, all the pioneers that walked before you, that walked before me, but medicine shifting and the world shifting into a paradigm progression of health and wellness thinking, because that's just how the doctors from different generations were taught. It's like people would walk into a room and they'd be like, you need to lose this much weight, or what are you doing? And it was like that's just what was taught then. So it's also kind of fun just to go, everyone did the best they could. So that scare/fear/judgment appointment where someone feels like they're getting weighed like cattle, or someone's going to say, you're going to die because you're smoking. I mean, because to be honest with you, for some people, the coach approach, I will admit some people, love usually in that non-judgmental aware approach works, but some people do need to have a little fear at times too. So I think there's like a healthy blend of openness, love, and then showing people the data, but you really get on someone's level and you collaborate. And I'm just going to say this, that really what comes to mind, that I think we're both very kindred spirits because it's very similar to the way I interact with my patients, is we take the shame away.
Yes.
With this approach that you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. And you said something very interesting in terms of the fear, and some people need a bit of a scare. And I understand that, and I appreciate that. You also said some people need to see the data. I also love that. I'm a data person. So, I mean, data speaks to me.
No, I love data. We love the data, everyone.
Right. But I also realize other people don't. So here's what I'll say on that. And it goes to follow along with how I try to work and motivate and empower others. So with that smoker, instead of scaring them now these days, instead, I ask one of these probing questions that invites reflection and invites actually the client, the person in front of me, to do their own change talk. So for example, with a smoker, they tell me that they smoke, and then they look down and they give me the body language that says, I know I'm not supposed to be smoking. Please don't give me a huge, long lecture. I get that body language. So instead, I will say things like, I hear you. So could you tell me how your life would be different if you no longer smoked cigarettes? And now, all of a sudden, they look up, they straighten up, they look me in the eye, and they say, well, I'd be a lot richer. my wife would stop nagging me. I wouldn't have to change my shirt every time I went in the house. I'd be able to hold my grandson. And they start listing all these very personal reasons. And they start coming to this conclusion, wow, life would be a whole lot better. And in terms of the scare factor, I don't need to scare them, by the way. They can scare themselves. And that question, I think scaring is the tactic we need to use here, I might say, what do you think will happen if you continue as is? And then they'll say, I'll probably get a heart attack. Maybe I'll have a stroke like my mother did. I will run out of money. I'm likely to get a divorce. And they will start feeding themselves their own fear factor, which, by the way, is quite powerful and more powerful than if I started to feed them the fear factor. So, yes.
I'd like to say that the more sensory input we have when we're trying to make behavioral change, the more likely we're going to have change. So by having someone reflect back and mirror the reasons why, then start to even have an accountability or a journal. But I like to engage people in what their best way is, because that's the other thing, just like you, like someone, if they're making change with their mental health routine or their fitness or exercise, I ask them what gives them the most joy. When are you the most happiest? And then that right. often guides them too with this open-ended. And the more sensory input by you, not just lecturing to them and them verbally saying it out loud, they're starting to connect. They're starting to envision. They're starting to see what health looks like for them. They're creating their health picture. You're not creating it. They're creating it.
Right. Exactly. And when we do the visioning and we invite clients to think about their life in 20 years, I ask them to describe to me how they feel, how they look, how they're speaking, how their body's moving, how they're talking, and what they are even smelling, what they are literally feeling at that time. Bring in all the senses when possible.
I love this because I was listening to you. That's a multi-sensory awareness of how are you going to be well.
Mm-hmm. And it helps people to get a real sense and vision of themselves. And I have had clients come back to me and say, I want to be that 70-year-old woman leaping across the stream, feeling the cool water on my feet as I wade in it from the other side, feeling the breeze on my face, really being comfortable in my own body and my clothes. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and they give me this entire vision. And by the way, that is a patient's vision. It was so beautiful. I remember it so well. It's part sensory to get us into full awareness. And this is a great opportunity because you mentioned you ask people, what did you like to do, or what motivates you, to talk about the doing part of my work. So I gave you the coach being part. Mm-hmm. And then the doing part, I've broken down over the years. I've been able to pull this together in a 5-step cycle, where the first step is to be empathetic, then align motivation, then build confidence, set SMART goals, and then set accountability. And it's a cycle, because then we go back to empathy. So with this cycle and the doing that I'm doing when I'm with clients one-on-one and in groups, bringing that coach, that empathetic person here and now into the room. So that means that before I go into any session, I'm deep breathing, I'm putting away my phone, to-do list. I don't check a phone. I don't even bring it. It's on silent. And I'm simply 100% present with all my own senses.
I want to just say that is attunement.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And that right. is something that I do in between clients. I have a ritual where after I shut the door, I think like a loving kindness. I have ways of like resetting throughout the day, so that the connection I just had with that person in our discussion for their mental health, well-being, physical well-being, you are holding accountability yourself, Dr. Beth. You're saying, I'm here with another human being and I'm connecting with their highest intentions for health and well-being, and I'm showing up. I'm holding myself accountable. I'm a present doctor. I'm a mindful doctor.
Right. And I love it. And I love being present. I feel I get into flow when I'm with people or in groups and doing this type of lifestyle medicine consulting and work. And though it is also tiring, because I am fully 100% present for that time. It's energizing.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, after an afternoon, I do feel tired. I feel exhausted. And it took me a long time. It wasn't probably until 5 years ago I admitted that, because I'm supposed to be superwoman and not have any fatigue and not admit that I would rather relax after a afternoon of sessions, go for a jog, paddleboard, go to a yoga class, do something different after an afternoon. And I can't possibly go all day, every day, doing this kind of work, because it is work. It is lovely and beautiful, but it is also work.
Well, I think the other thing that we can shift into now, because I love that we did the being and the doing and the coach approach, but then Dr. Beth, you're a person and I'm a person. And I think when we were going through medical school, we were not at the time where they were integrating wellness, lifestyle, behavior for us as physicians. And so I too, it's really interesting our timeline, because I didn't know you 5 years ago, but that's when I launched into the world of like, just started to think about this, how can I be helpful to others that maybe couldn't come see me in person? So with the show and with my website, but then with humility, I'm an empath, which means I'm very, very open and aware of other people's feelings. And I follow, you know, you have a name, it's the coach approach, but I practice and follow that approach.
Right. Just
who I am and how I am. However, I feel like I get more humbled every year I'm on earth of making sure I take care of myself. Like, how can I be a role model for my patients if I'm not walking the walk? And so swimming for me is I swim 6 or 7 days a week. And I feel so rejuvenated because I too listen and care, and it's a lot of energy. And people don't talk about, they don't think and synthesize when they're picking what career they're going to have, or even which friend, maybe when you hang out and you pay attention, like which friend can be more draining, or which one where you feel more inspired, because everything's energy. And so that's part of being aware. And then you can craft out your day of health and well-being. And so can you share your favorite ways that you replenish and take good care of yourself as a lifestyle medicine expert and someone who walks the walk?
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to do so. I shared in a video podcast with Sanity Snack last year, actually, about how I hit a crisis point in my life where I was not taking care of myself. And that is a tough spot to be in. And you do have a lot of self-reflection when you hit that point. And for me, it was a few years ago when I had two little boys. They're now big, but I had two little boys and I was also working, and I felt like I wasn't doing anything really well. So I spent a lot of time at work. And when I was at work, I spent a lot of time with the boys. I wanted to be a great mother. And I stopped my routine exercise, which for my go-to has always been jogging. So jogging is just it's a great exercise for me. And I get a great runner's high and endorphin rush there. And it is lovely for me to be outdoors in nature to do this. I rarely am on the treadmill. And I stopped that because I felt that I needed to spend every waking moment on work or with the boys. And it really did impact me in many, many ways, in my confidence, in my happiness. And my husband really encouraged me, thank goodness, to get out there. And it was actually getting Reese. So it was really nine years ago, getting a dog, which helped me to get out there and get moving, because my husband knows me so well. And you are this way too. I like to help other people. And if I'm helping someone else, I'm more likely to do it. So I learned that when you have a dog, you need to be out and walk the dog, run the dog.
I love Reese. Now I even know why even more. Oh my goodness. Every time I see your pictures on social media with Reese, now I'm going to know even more of the hidden secrets. Like, right? Reese's like, yeah. Reese rocks. Reese's like your lifestyle medicine specialist.
Well, actually, quite frankly, yes. Right. So you said, what do you do? So there's running, and Reese helped me get back into that. I do it now. A little older, I don't always take her on the longer runs, but there's that. Then there's socialization, actually connecting with family and friends and loved ones. It's a huge part of a healthy lifestyle, and I do that. And in terms of stress reduction, yoga has always been my go-to in terms of mindfulness practices. I mean, by the way, the word always, that was inappropriate. It has been since being a lifestyle medicine practitioner and really diving deeply into this. So I would say for the past 10 years. Before that, yoga was not part of my life. So I have a pre-yoga life and a post-yoga life. But I do enjoy the outdoors. For me, being out, so paddle boarding, now paddle yoga, tennis with friends, depending on the season, skiing, cross-country skiing, even just making snow angels or building a snowman or being out in nature and really connecting with either the water or the snow or whatever season it may be in New England. We have a wide variety of options for activities. And then for me, it's not eating that processed diet that my dad followed for so many years, full of fast food and sugar. It's actually the entire opposite of that, and really a plant-based whole food type of diet, or close to the Harvard Healthy Plate, where half the plate is veggies. Actually, you want to have a rainbow of colors on your plate, not just white and brown. You need a rainbow to get all those phytonutrients so food can be your medicine. And then a whole grain of some kind, like a quinoa for me, brown rice for me, and then a quarter being a healthy protein for me. I go predominantly with the beans, nuts, seeds, legumes, and that's really the Harvard Healthy Plate. They put in some fish and some possibly a little bit of chicken in there in the healthy plate. I tend to stick with the plant protein. So sleep, the other pillar in lifestyle medicine. I have always been a very good sleeper. I will say that I can sleep anywhere at any time. But I didn't really fully appreciate the value of sleep until I looked at the data and really noted the decrease in reaction time that we have, in the diminished learning that we have when we are sleep deprived, when we are sleeping less than 6 hours. And that I may have done, and I know I did in my training in medicine and during medical school and during stressful times, especially when I was nursing my two boys. There were times when I definitely was not getting that sleep, but I prioritize that sleep now on a sleep schedule. And I really stick firmly to that. And I don't engage in any substances. I will occasionally have a glass of wine, but that is a rarity. I've never been one to engage in any substances actually at all. Just occasional wine. So that is my healthy lifestyle go-to.
Yes. Dr. Beth?
Yes.
I just want to pause. You just shared, I feel like this has been a really fun time together, getting to know more of the who you are. And you're going to be on the show, and you and I have some fun ideas to give a lot of database. But I'm thinking of everything you just shared about lifestyle. And I'm also think that you and I both talk about adaptive. Well, I just did a podcast called Adaptive Perfectionism versus Restrictive Perfectionism. And I think when people are living like the outside looks so great, but the inside, they're not doing the nutrition, mostly plant-based, adequate sleep, mindfulness, joy, compassion, time in nature. But I think people sometimes get overwhelmed when they're making that first step. And I also like to tell people that if like 80 to 90% of the time you're making good choices, you're on your way to optimal health. Because we know that then that influences our genes and influences our physiology. And what I love about Dr. Beth is I'm holding this incredible book, and it's the Lifestyle Medicine Handbook, An Introduction to the Power of Healthy Habits. And you did that in collaboration with American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And I just want to just pause and say thank you. Thank you to all your colleagues who put so much love into this handbook that just won the top 100. Can you tell us a bit about this incredible book and the journey with the book so everyone knows about it and how they can get their hands on it?
Sure. You're very kind to mention it. And the book really is a labor of love from many years in the field of lifestyle medicine when it wasn't even called lifestyle medicine. I developed the first lifestyle medicine course, full course at Harvard at the Harvard Extension School in 2016 and taught that course for 3 years, then took a break. I'll be teaching again in January, took a break to put the course into a package such that other professors can give the very same course around the country and even internationally. So the first step there was to share my syllabus, which is free and downloadable at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And then the second step was to put the information into a book. So the American College of Lifestyle Medicine helped me to publish it. And James Peterson at Healthy Learning was the publisher as well as co-author. Jonathan Bonnet, who is a colleague and teaching assistant of my course at the Harvard Extension School. And then Rich Joseph, who just graduated and finished his residency at the Brigham in Family Medicine, helped to pull all the material together into this handbook. It's the first handbook of lifestyle medicine, and it has information on our six pillars: exercise, nutrition, sleep, social connections, stress resiliency, and addictions. So it is a comprehensive approach to lifestyle medicine, which also includes a lot of what you do, Dr. Denise. It just doesn't do the pillars. We have positive psychology in there. There's two chapters on the coach approach, coaching, the being of behavior change and the doing of behavior change. I believe what the feedback I've got from the book is they like the template of each chapter. So there's the information about the pillar, so about exercise, how it impacts every system of our body. That's in every chapter. Then the evidence, the research around how that pillar, say exercise, affects heart disease, stroke, diabetes. Then we move to some live and learns, which is a part of the book that people tend to enjoy and they've given me great feedback on. And this is a part where I'm a bit vulnerable and I share patient cases. Of course, there's no specifics. You can't identify the patient. I share the interactions and often I'm sharing something I may not have done as well as I wanted. I was doing the best I could at the time, but I didn't have the information to make a better choice. So I'm basically sharing some missteps in management. And I'm doing this so that other practitioners and people can see that we make mistakes, we learn from them, and we move on. We use the growth mindset.
Absolutely.
And these personal stories, I think, are a part of the book that people gravitate to. But I will tell you, for you, Dr. Denise, who loves and adores the research, every chapter has, at the end of it, a research chart where we have the authors of the research study, the date, the title of the journal, and then the significant outcomes. So if you want to see the data, you can see it. Yes.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to be adaptive, but I'm going to have you back on. Wouldn't it be cool if we kind of just march through the handbook and we could pick a topic, a pillar, and we could discuss it and just
terrific.
Talk with examples that we both had and then honor all the great minds and scientists who gave us the data to know that how we can have healthier lives.
Terrific. That sounds like a great idea.
Oh my goodness. Dr. Beth, can you tell everyone how we can find you?
Sure. I have a website. I'm going to be updating it, but it's wellness-synergy.com. And I'm on Twitter at Beth Frades MD. And those would be the best ways to find me.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And I can't wait to have you back. And I have deep gratitude for your heart energy and the love that you're putting into all that you do with your patients and to teaching and inspiring others. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Dr. Denise. It was a real joy. And I love the way you tapped into something that I hadn't tapped into before. So I want to express deep gratitude for that opportunity too.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Have a great week, everyone. I'll be back with another show soon. Thank you.